The topic of this session is codependency. What is it? And my name is Rich Anderson. What I'd like to do is present just a lot of different information to you that I've kind of accumulated about codependency. Throw some things out and then give us all a chance to discuss it. I think what my experience has been over the last maybe 15 years of doing marriage and family therapy and doing chemical dependency treatment is that we've been wading through the woods the last 10 or 15 years trying to understand more of what's going on with spouses or family members of addicted people. It got to the point in my private marriage and family therapy practice that I was almost diagnosing chemically dependent people by understanding their spouses or their family members. There were a number of times, I guess, when in dealing with a family member and understanding a lot of the dynamics and problems they were experiencing, I would ask, is there any possibility that your spouse or a parent drinks excessively? And, you know, all of a sudden we just opened a bunch of new doors. Recently in codependency, I think we've also been finding out that it tends to be a way of coping or relating or living with an addictive type person. So it's not only limited to people that are in relationships with alcoholics or chemically dependent people. And maybe later on we can get a chance to talk about that a little bit. I think some of what I'll say or talk about will be in relationship to living with chemically dependent people. That's what I do most of my work with. But I hope we can generalize it a little bit more. And I hope you won't keep it so narrowly focused on just spouses or family members of alcoholics or whatever, because it goes much, much broader than that. I'm from Minnesota. We're doing chemical dependency treatment in our treatment center now. We're doing it a bit differently than a lot of traditional treatment centers do. We are attempting to move towards a more family systems approach to doing chemical dependency treatment. And that's based on the assumption that every chemically dependent person affects about four other people in an adverse or negative way. And usually these are their family members that are closest to them. And so one of the requirements for somebody to be admitted to our chemical dependency treatment program for chemical dependency treatment is that they must have at least one family member with them coming into our codependency treatment program. We make the assumption that you can't take the individual out of their family, run them through treatment, and send them back to the same family that's sick and dysfunctional and expect them to be able to survive. And I guess our hope is that we are going to have to try and treat as much of the whole family system as we can. And that involves the codependents that are in relationship to the chemically dependent person. Could someone catch the door back there? I think the staff meeting next door is going to cause us a little bit of noise. At least it always has. I want to go through a few things, throw some thoughts and ideas out to you, and then let's discuss them. One is a questionnaire that I have, and I've got a few copies here if later you'd like to get a copy of it. This is a questionnaire that we sometimes use to help people raise some questions or try and sort out whether some of these codependency characteristics are maybe part of your own personality. Let me read them to you kind of quickly. First question says, do you worry excessively and lose sleep over problems of other people rather than your own, or including your own? Number two, do you feel confused a lot and have difficulty making decisions? Number three, do you make decisions or threats and not follow through with them? Number four, do you conceal or deny problems and try to protect your loved ones? And that's protect in an excessive, overly protective kind of way. Do you find you've taken over chores and duties that others should be doing? Number six, have you withdrawn from social activities and friends? Number seven, do you feel anxious, fearful, angry, alone, frustrated much of the time? Number eight, have you noticed physical symptoms in yourself, such as nausea, knots in your stomach, ulcers, shakiness, sweating, nervousness, etc.? Nine, do you find you hold back your feelings much of the time because you don't want to hurt others and have them think less of you? Well, that's kind of a double whammy. That's a self-esteem, that's a pleasing kind of perspective, and it's also a super responsible, I'm the one who can cause all these things perspective. Number 10, do you find when a relative or close friend asks for help more than you'd like, you still say yes anyway? 11, do you often feel like no one really knows you? And the emphasis there is really knows you. 12, are you sometimes embarrassed by behaviors of those close to you? 13, do you find yourself apologizing to others for what you say or do? 14, do you find you often appear happy to others when you are really sad or angry? And 15, do you find you tend to put others' needs before your own and rarely make time to do things just for you? Those are some questions I think that you can look at and evaluate. I've also got a list here of characteristics that are fairly common among codependent people. A basic definition that's often used is that it's a dysfunctional pattern of living and problem solving, which is nurtured by a set of rules within a family system. And some of these unhealthy characteristics are things such as difficulty in actually identifying feelings. Am I angry? Am I lonely? Am I sad? Do I feel hurt? What is it? Difficulty expressing feelings. Not knowing how to express them. Being afraid of what others might think or feel or act in response. Worse yet, what might they think of me if they knew my true emotions or feelings? It's a real combination of self-esteem, relationship pleasing, fear of emotions, and intimacy. Difficulty in forming or maintaining close relationships. I want to be close to others, but I'm afraid of being hurt or rejected by them. Perfectionism. Too many expectations of yourself and others. Number five, a rigid or stuck attitudes and behaviors. Even though it hurts to live this way, it's the only way I know. Number six, difficulty adjusting to change. Seven, feeling overly responsible for other people's behavior or feelings. I'm embarrassed by what someone else does. Number eight, it's a constant need for others' approval in order to feel good about me. And that one talks about the issue of locus of control. We talked about this in another lecture, but locus of control is a concept of understanding where decisions about you and your behavior are made. Is it an internal locus of control, something that you have within you, and you decide, and you make those decisions, or is it external? Does the outside world and other people decide about your worth, your value, decide about your behavior and the way you'll act, or think, or feel? Constant need for others' approval in order to feel good about myself. Difficulty making decisions, worrying or thinking so much that you get stuck and don't decide at all. Number 10, general feelings of powerlessness over one's life. Nothing I do makes any difference. And 11, a basic sense of shame and low self-esteem over perceived failures in one's life. And then to go on, codependency is a lifestyle. It's a patterned way of relating to other people. It's a way of interpreting experience with a sense of low self-esteem, lack of worth and value, feeling a lot of guilt and shame about you, that's really at the core. Codependent people suffer from a progressive focusing of attention on a target and a neglect of one's own feelings and needs. One of the best comments I've ever heard from an individual who was in our codependency treatment program was, she said, she was talking with some other people once, and she said, the best definition I know of codependency is, a codependent is one who, when they fall out of the boat in the middle of the lake and are drowning, they go down for the third time, somebody else's whole life passes before their eyes. And she's talking about the fact that other people and someone else is really the primary focus of their whole life and their effort to change and control and function. Codependents also lead lives characterized by an inability to have spontaneous fun, inability to let go, life is serious, spontaneity can't be trusted, because it threatens feeling or acting or behaving out of control. And control, being in control, is a very significant issue. There are problems with intimacy, lack of trust, fear of pain, rejection, disappointment. Inability to know what normal behavior is. Often codependents come in and don't know what's normal and what's abnormal, often think they are going crazy. An exaggerated need for approval of others. I must always be on guard to keep from offending other people. I must please them or they won't like me. Confusion about making decisions. We talked about that a little bit already. Anxiety about making changes. I don't think I could handle it if I got a promotion. I don't think I could handle it if this changed or that changed. Black and white judgments. No room for compromise, rarely any shades of gray. It's either this or that. It's another way of talking about a tendency for all or nothing thinking. It's either all this way or it's all that way. Fear and denial of anger and emotions. Lots of repression of feeling, lots of denial that I really feel that way, lots of stuffing, and commonly much physical illness, pains as a result of a lot of emotional stuffing, and a lot of depression. Lies and exaggerations when it would be easier to tell the truth. And it seems real strange and crazy, but attempting to cope and live with the situation gets people into the perspective that it's better to lie than to tell the truth. Fear of abandonment and rejection. And basically they're saying, I'm no clinging vine, but I couldn't live without you. A tendency to look for people to take care of. And I think that's a strong need to feel needed by other people. And if you can take care of them and develop a dependency upon you to take care of them, then you feel needed and you feel worthwhile and you feel valuable. And a need to control self and others. I can't let my guard down. Life is a serious business. And so life has to be under control. Another thing I want to show you, and I put it up on the board, is that we're doing a lot of work now in trying to establish some diagnostic criteria for codependency. In our business, there's a Bible called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. And the third one is out right now, and it gives you all the characteristics and symptomatology for diagnosing personality, mental disorder kinds of issues, and substance abuse disorders. But it doesn't cover anything in codependency. Some of the current work that's happening now in developing the DSM-4 is attempting to include codependency. And these are some of the things that I think are probably going to be included. I thought I'd throw them out. I think they help to define or clarify some of it. First one is a continued investment of self-esteem in the inability to influence or control feelings and behavior in oneself and others in the face of obvious adverse consequences. In other words, an individual's self-worth, self-esteem is invested in controlling feelings and behavior, both of themselves and of the other person, regardless of the fact that the consequences are negative or that they're destructive. Secondly, it's the assumption of responsibility for meeting another person's needs to the exclusion of acknowledging one's own needs or meeting one's own needs. It's the difference between being responsible for and responsible to. And it chooses to be responsible for another person, to take care of them, to pick up after them, to make excuses for them, to cover for them, and often very much to the exclusion of meeting one's own personal needs. See, anxiety or boundary distortions in situations of intimacy and separation. Codependents often aren't clear about where I end and you begin. They raise children to not know the difference between me and you. It's all we. Enmeshment in relationships with personality disordered, chemically dependent, or impulse disordered individuals. And that's the point at which I'm saying that codependency is an issue that happens for people that are in relationships with people that aren't only chemically dependent, but can have personality disorders or impulse disorders also. And I think that generalizes off into workaholics, sexaholics, materialists, religion addicts, lots of other kinds of obsessional disorders that we see in society. And E talks about exhibiting at least three of the following characteristics. Number one, constriction of emotions. In light of the fact that people may at times blow up and just get mad or angry or just let stuff fly, the normal process is to stuff and hold and keep within. Or they may experience a lot of depression. It can be just kind of an ongoing, constant sense or level of depression that they've learned to cope with and don't even know they're depressed because it seems like it's normal. It's been around for so long. Hypervigilance, constantly being on alert, constantly watching and checking and running around behind everybody, picking up or making sure they don't fall and get hurt. That often is the issue that we talk about again, their sense of focus. Focus is on the other person. They're always paying attention to what's going on with the other person, to the exclusion of paying attention to what's going on with themselves. Compulsions, number four. Anxiety, number five. Excessive reliance on denial, number six. Substance abuse, and that includes not only abusing necessarily alcohol, but maybe abusing prescribed medications, abusing other kinds of chemicals. Very commonly abusing caffeine or nicotine. And recurrent victimization, physical, emotional, sexual. And a lot of self-victimization. A lot of self-degrading, a lot of setting oneself up for failure, a lot of multiple failures. And under that category, I think we'd throw in perfectionism. Perfectionism is an acute little process of constant victimization, constant failure. And number nine, remaining in a primary relationship with an active substance abuser for at least 2 years without seeking outside support. I thought that was a rather interesting one, that somewhere they picked out 2 years as what was significant or important. But at least in this kind of a listing of trying to come up with some classifications and symptomatology for making a diagnosis, you need to pick only three of those nine in the last category. Okay, at this point, that's a bunch of stuff. Let's throw it out. What kind of thoughts or reactions do you have or questions?
These kind of symptoms more prevalent among men or women or a certain race, like Scandinavian or Spanish, Italian, Irish, you know, just families.
I'm not sure I'm in a good position to tell you because I live in Minnesota. And we don't know what Italians are in Minnesota. I'm sorry, what?
Could you repeat the question?
Okay. Are these kind of symptoms prevalent among any specific kind of group, such as men or women or certain races or whatever? The most that we see are women. But we see a tremendous amount of it in men. Once we treat them for their chemical dependency and get down to finding out more personally who they are as a person, we find a tremendous amount of codependency underlying a lot of men that have gone through chemical dependency treatment. And what we've discovered probably in the last 5 or 6 years is that a lot of men maybe are codependent and get into substance abuse as a form of coping with that, develop chemical dependency as an outgrowth of their substance abuse, and that then becomes the primary focus that gets all the attention and eventually gets treated. But then we run into difficulties with people that have been treated for chemical dependency and are having lots of problems with it, and we've begun treating post-discharge chemical dependency patients in codependency treatment for their own codependency problems. And we're getting a lot more success in recovery of chemically dependent males when they've had codependency treatment also. And females both. That's a long answer to your question. I don't know if you have an answer to it.
Well, I'm from Minnesota too.
Yeah.
So I know where you're coming from.
Are you saying that codependency is basically an underlying personality disorder, perhaps, and that a codependent person would almost seek out someone who would need them? Or is it possible for an otherwise normal and emotionally healthy person to get drawn into that codependency behavior by virtue of the fact that they're married to an alcoholic?
Did you hear the question?
Can codependency be a normal coping mechanism that obviously turns dysfunctional?
I guess what we're predicting is that DSM-4 is going to identify it as a personality disorder. And it's not going to identify certain coping mechanisms that aren't problematic. It's only going to identify the problematic ones. Clearly, I think most people know about the people who are married to a chemically dependent person, divorce that person and go out and marry another one, divorce that person, go out and marry another one, divorce that person and will have nothing to do with drinkers and then go out and marry a workaholic. I think part of the difficulty is we're not too sure where a lot of this develops, whether it develops in the relationship or whether it's something that you learn at home. I think a lot of people learn it at home in their families when they're growing up. There's a tremendous number of people, at least in Minnesota, who have grown up at home with mom there doing everything for everybody and teaching you that you're responsible for everybody and you're responsible for their feelings and emotions, and that good Christian boys and girls are, take care of other people and think of themselves last. I know when I went to Lutheran Church when I was growing up, the whole biblical issue of when Jesus is asked what's the greatest commandment, and his answer was, love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your mind, and your neighbor as yourself, was taught that that means first you love God, then you love your neighbor, and then you love yourself. And who's your neighbor? Well, if you know the Good Samaritan story, everybody is your neighbor. And the church back then in the 50s was essentially teaching you that first you love God, then you love everybody else in the world, and then you love yourself. And I think that contributed to a tremendous number of codependents cropping up around. Yes?
Would birth order have anything to do with codependency? Like you were just saying, the family, the children were brought up that way. I know a lot of times the oldest child has more responsibility put on them, and the middle child syndrome, feeling left out, and the youngest being baby.
Yeah. Did you hear the question? Did birth order have? I'm not real up on current, I guess, understanding and studies of birth order. I'm certain it has some influence and some effect. I'm not exactly sure exactly where or how or why some children will pattern themselves after mom, who may be very codependent, and others will pattern themselves after dad, who may be a very dependent or addictive type of personality. What we tell many adolescents whose parents are in chemical dependency, codependency treatment is that they've got a 50-50 chance of either being chemically dependent or codependent without any help. And much of the work currently in dealing with children of alcoholics is to help them find another third or fourth alternative to growing up as a chemically dependent or codependent person, or growing up and recreating that kind of a family environment again.
Do you find codependency already in the children, though?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's frightening. We see it in little children where mom and dad are maybe in the offices in our treatment center seeing the counselors, and two or three of the little kids are out in the waiting room waiting for mom and dad to get done. And you see the 6-year-old daughter there taking care of her 2- and 4-year-old brothers, and you'd swear if you didn't look that that was mom. I mean, she's saying the same thing, she's acting the same thing, she's taking the responsibilities for her, she's doing all the same stuff.
Do you treat the children then, too, if you can?
We aren't right now. We don't have any way of doing that. Some people are starting to do that, and I think that would really be ideal. It'd be ideal, ultimately, to be able to treat the codependent, the chemically dependent, and then the entire family as a unit. So far, nobody's willing to pay the cost, and it's very costly to do that. Yes.
What causes codependence, some codependents, to turn to chemical abuse and others not, to cope in some other manner? What is their predisposition towards chemical abuse?
The question was, why does some codependence turns towards chemical abuse and others don't? I don't know. It's a pretty individual thing. Why some people turn towards depression rather than chemical abuse, or why would some turn towards other kinds of relationship or emotional problems?
Well, it sounds like they'd be depressed anyway and turn toward, that is something that would lead toward chemical abuse.
Mm-hmm. We see a tremendous amount of antidepressant medication being dished out to codependents who are not coping well and quite depressed, and trying to stay with the situation and don't want anything to change, but also don't want to be depressed. And one of the really dangerous, I guess, things that we see happening a lot are having a chemically dependent spouse who maybe is the husband and a codependent wife, and the codependent wife is heavily into antidepressant medication just to cope and to hang in there. And then, of course, you get maybe physicians or mental health professionals trying to treat her depression without really dealing with the whole issue that maybe involves chemical dependency and all the other family kinds of problems going on. Clearly, the codependents that we know that get into chemical dependency also are drinking right along with them because they just can't stand the way it feels to not. It's a medicating feelings, it's an escape, it's a wanting to forget and drown my sorrows kind of approach.
So maybe it's a family type thing. I mean, if their fathers and mothers used chemical substances to cope, then that's probably what children has, just a vicious circle.
It happens a lot, you know.
You have trouble sometimes distinguishing whether the, you know, which of the, if it's a spouse relationship, which of the spouses is more dependent on the other? I mean, who's causing whose depression?
I don't think I have trouble with it because I don't do it. Degrees of who's more dependent on one than the other or whatever, I'm not sure that that's an important thing to determine. I guess what we look at is what's destructive, what's self-destructive, what's happening, what's creating problems. With a lot of people that are codependent, our approach has been to treat them extensively in the same amount of time, the same amount of work, the same amount of individual and group therapy that we treat people that are chemically dependent, but in a separate group. And a lot of codependency people that come in and talk to us about what can I do about my spouse who's drunk all the time or doing this or that, our answer is to say, get yourself into codependency treatment and take care of you. And often, that other person eventually comes trickling in and saying, I can't stand it. I can't tolerate living with my spouse after the changes that are being made are being made. It's too painful now. And basically what we've done is, in their learning about their own codependency and their own behaviors, they've taken away the landing net. When he comes, you know, when he gets it, sits at home and drinks six or eight drinks and then gets in the car clearly intoxicated, she calls the police. When he's, you know, when he's hung over the next morning and supposed to call into work, she won't do it. Finally, someone from work calls and, you know, she hands him the phone. I'm not going to get in the middle. I'm not going to take care of you anymore. All the consequences of their behavior as a chemically dependent person start landing on their head instead of the codependent picking them up, buffering them, taking care of them, making excuses. And then the real pain of being chemically dependent starts coming through. So one of the best ways that we've found to convince chemically dependent people that they need help is to get the codependents into treatment and to get them to change their behavior.
Is this the approach taken by Al-Anon and a lot of the offshoots of AA?
Parts of Al-Anon take that approach. There are other, it's, Al-Anon groups vary a lot. And some Al-Anon groups I know try to convince you to continue doing what you're doing and help you live with it. Other Al-Anon groups say there's no way, you need to live with it, and you, but you need to work and change what you're doing. So that really varies group to group, I think.
Are the codependent people frequently abused mentally or physically? Is that part of the...
Yeah, that's part of the victimization issue that's going on. There's a lot of emotional or verbal abuse that goes on in that kind of relationship, and often there's a tremendous amount of physical abuse. I think we've been running 70 or 80% of our couples coming through chemical dependency treatment are also domestic abuse, domestic violence victims and perpetrators, and get referred on then to a domestic violence treatment program after chemical dependency, codependency treatment.
Have you ever treated a spouse of an alcoholic that is not, doesn't fit the codependency criteria?
We've seen a couple. It's difficult sometimes to understand why they're the spouse of an alcoholic when they don't fit that criteria. And sometimes after we work with the alcoholic, we can understand it a little bit better, that this alcoholic is maybe a very early stage disease. There's some other dynamics going on, but it's a pretty rare case. We've seen spouses of alcoholics that are chemically dependent themselves, not necessarily very codependent at all, but have some characteristics in them. I think we decide when somebody's codependent needs treatment when the degree of pain and misery in their life as a result of being that way becomes pretty intolerable to them.
So it's something that they really don't, they're at a loss to make a decision for themselves at that point.
Usually. And what we find, I think, in most of the codependents that come through our program is that they are so focused on their chemically dependent spouse that they can't even tell you about who they are. It's almost, it's both very, very sad, and it's also sometimes very humorous to have a codependent in the office and begin going through a diagnostic interview. One I remember a day or two before I left to come out here, I sat down and as I go through a general kind of psychosocial interview, I asked her right off, for one of the first questions is, do you smoke cigarettes? And her response was, well, my husband smokes about a pack a day. And I said, well, do you smoke cigarettes? Well, I think he's been smoking for about 18 years, that much. He used to do it, and she couldn't give me an answer about herself. Until I told her, wait a minute, I don't know, want to know anything about him, I want to know only about you. Well, then she could give me an answer. Then we got onto the next question, she immediately shifted over to him again. That everything that happened in her life, that her mind continually revolved around, was what was going on with him. And finally, at one point, she was telling me something about recently her husband had was driving drunk, got in a car accident, got a DWI, was hurt in the hospital, and I said, how did you feel when you got the phone call from the police department that your husband had been in an accident and was in the hospital? And she, totally blank. She couldn't tell me how she felt at all. She basically was totally short-circuited. between her emotions and any kind of registering in her mind as to what they were. But she could sure tell me everything about his accident and everything verbatim that he said when she went to the hospital. And I mean, she had his life down. And she was literally living it. And she didn't know that she was totally enmeshed and involved in him, to the exclusion of having no concept of herself, no idea that there was a difference between him and her. She's going to be a real challenge in treatment.
So what's your approach to making people aware of their behavior and how they can change it?
Well, it starts out with 5 weeks of pretty intense individual and group therapy. And it's a combination of some education, but also some pretty structured group and individual work to help them not only identify what they are doing, but identify what they're not doing. And help them begin to find out who they are, how they are different from, how they feel, what they think that's different from. It's really kind of a pulling apart and a differentiation process, and in many cases it's a complete identifying of who you are as an individual, unique person, separate from the rest of the world that before was your whole universe. And it takes quite a long time. 5 weeks in treatment really, for many people, just kind of opens a can of worms and gets them going on it.
What strikes me, and I may be way off on this, is that a lot of these people have a model for love that includes the behaviors that they're doing. They confuse what they're doing with love. They think what they're doing is loving. And right. All the caring for, the looking after, all that kind of stuff is their definition of love, and they've bought it from their parents or from our culture. I was hitting on earlier when you're talking about the nothingness of the self, and I think of popular songs that you hear all the time, and nothing without you, what good am I without you? Oh. You know, it's constantly reinforced to people, our teenagers, who buy that stuff and listen to it all the time on the radio, that unless you are totally enmeshed in some other person, then you're absolutely nothing.
That's right. It's frightening.
And that's what they think is love.
Sure.
You know, and that's, I love you, and therefore I'm nothing without you.
Sounds like an excellent topic for the session I'm going to do tomorrow. And that's working and taking a look at the differences between being addicted to somebody and being in love with them.
And do you offer a model for love in your therapy, or do you talk about that?
Yeah, at some points. That's a little bit further down the road, after a person's been able to identify just who they are. After they found out who they are as a person, and begun to work on their own sense of self-love, then we begin to take a look at, okay, what's healthy relationships? And what is healthy relational love? Being able to know the difference, but yet being in relationship with. But that's the kind of stuff that we get into probably 15 weeks into treatment or something like that. Because that's the kind of thing that they immediately want to get into. They right away want to focus on their relationship and how much this other person means to me. And until you're really able to do some separating and some clear differentiating and some clear self-identity, self-esteem work, and really make the break and the difference very clear and pretty radical, it's really dangerous to get into the relationship kinds of stuff because I get sucked right back into the other side. Yes?
Alcoholism is a disease of denial. Number six there. You have six and seven. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking a lot of alcoholics or addicts must be codependent. You just have to pick one more thing.
tremendous number of the alcoholics are codependent. And I believe they were probably codependent first and weren't able to cope with their codependency well and use their chemical as a way of escaping or attempting to cope, and began to abuse the chemical and inadvertently slipped into addiction. And like I was talking this afternoon, a tremendous number of chemically dependent people, in order to find a quality sobriety or to have any kind of personal success in recovery, really need a lot of codependency treatment. And we're beginning to run more and more post-treatment alcoholics through codependency treatment, so they'll have a better chance of making it in recovery from their chemical dependency also. So I'd say if you have a family member who's chemically dependent, and they go through treatment, they're maybe going to AA, I talk to them about the value of possibly looking at codependency also, of maybe checking out, learning and finding out some things about their own codependency, about the value of getting involved in Al-Anon, and some of those aspects that it's really pervasive, and it's been an eye-opener for us. We never expected it, but it's coming out of the woodwork all the time.
Can you find, like, impulse disorders?
That's the kind of thing where you'll find somebody who is real calm on the surface and all of a sudden just blow up in anger. Or they might, a lot of physically abusive people are impulse disorders. They'll react and pop and hit somebody, or they'll shove somebody around. They react impulsively. They'll be impulse buyers, the impulse spenders. When the going gets tough, the tough go shopping, that kind of stuff. We've got a good friend back home, and we're going to get her a t-shirt that says Ready, Aim, Shop.
Thank you. I'm not sure on the codependency. I have been to a session previous to this. Codependency, is that dependency focused on the partner's dependency on a certain addiction? The co-dependency, or is that sort of synonymous? I've heard the term enabling personalities or an enabler. Codependency, I'm not sure of what, or is it similar to the...
I think it's real similar to probably what you've heard a lot about enablers or enabling personalities. It's essentially the kind of person who is really focused on and dependent on another individual who more than likely is addicted.
Well, they're dependent on the individual.
Right.
And that individual may or may not be addicted to something?
Most of the time is, yeah. But
I mean, is there a chance, I suppose, you could be codependent to a person that may or may not have addiction?
Sure. In other words, we found a number of codependents that grew up in their families of origin, learning to be codependents, and married somebody that clearly has no identifiable addiction. But they're codependent to dad, who was a workaholic, good old Minnesota farmer who worked 18 hours a day. And mom was just enabled and codependent to that like crazy and taught all the kids that way. Some of them married chemically dependent people. Some of them married workaholics. Some of them married somebody who wasn't addicted to really anything, but just loved being pampered by this codependent. Mm-hmm.
I can identify with that. I didn't know I had been a codependent, but I just recently got out of a marriage to a person who was chronically ill. And and the illness kept getting progressively worse. And just about everything, well, I didn't have substance abuse or self-esteem problems, but all of the other things,
we only need three of these nine.
Yeah, I had more than three.
Okay.
But I don't know that there was any particular addiction in my spouse at all, but boy, I can sure see what I was there. And it was in caring for an ill person.
Sure. And that, I don't know that ill person, but they may fall into a personality disorder problem. It may be a chronic pain syndrome individual. Lots of chronic pain people are surrounded by codependents. And chronic pain treatment centers are beginning to identify that now and start treating codependency along with trying to treat the chronic pain. Therefore, trying to treat the whole family system somehow. I think it's very understandable that if you were married to a chronically ill person for a long time, you clearly could be very codependent. They need somebody like that to stay chronically ill sometimes. Did you have?
Well, I guess, yeah, I have two questions, but back to that, in a situation like that, is it his illness that would have made her codependent? Or would it have just been underlying, perhaps an underlying tendency to be that way?
It's very possible that
get real hung up on that.
That's what brought the two of them together. I don't know how long he was ill, but if that could be the attracting factor.
No, we were married about 17 years and he was ill about 10.
Okay.
In a progressive illness, and finally got so bad I couldn't. But mm-hmm. But it was a case where, I didn't know who I was. I didn't want anything anymore. Somebody asked me, okay, what do you want? I didn't know.
Sure.
I could only think about what I had to take care of.
Yeah, and focus on him.
But I'd like an answer to that question, too. Once I'm out of that, am I going to talk to someone else like that, or am I going to?
Well, I would clearly caution you to get some help for that, or you're high risk, very high risk for, latching onto another addictive kind of personality, a needy person that needs you to do that for them, and you'll fall right into the same, you'll marry the same person with a different name.
But if she had the strength to get out of it, doesn't that show?
It may not have been the strength to get out as much as the pain and repulsion and the attempt to escape it. But that doesn't help you change the personality characteristics that you have as a result of being in it. And a lot of people that plan to divorce their chemically dependent spouse and think that's going to solve my problems. Go marry the next one. Did we answer your question?
Well, I talked with you about it two days before, and it's the same point that I get real hung up on. It. Are you making the codependent a problem when in fact it's the other person's problem and they're just adapting as best they can? And obviously it becomes dysfunctional to a point.
Yeah, basically I tend to believe that much of these characteristics are learned at home. And sometimes they're never needed. Other times they become needed after you've been married for 10 years or something, and you fall back on them and begin to develop them and start to focus on them and to the exclusion of other things. Let's take one more back there and then we'll quit.
People with anorexia fall in here?
Sometimes we found, a number of codependency people having problems with eating disorders. I don't think you can always say all anorexics are codependent or that all codependents are anorexic, but there's a lot of crossover.
Okay.